Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX and the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. This program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Fred Monroe is hosting the program from home today amid concerns about the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Fred and his guests will be looking at the COVID's impact on the Central Coast wine industry. Members of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance will discuss how the wine industry is coping with the fallout from the coronavirus pandemic. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation today. You can call 805-549-8855 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. Hi, Fred. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Rachel. Glad you're with us today. Glad everybody's with us today. Want to remind you that, as Rachel said, that you can send in emails at voices@kcbx.org or call into 549-8855 and make sure that your information and your questions get part of the discussion today. If we get questions that we run out of time or get some questions by email that are too long to address, I will assure you that we will pass along to our on-air guests all the information that you have that you might want some follow-up on. The COVID impact on the Central Coast has been tough on a lot of industries. I think for those of us who see wineries and going to wineries and consuming wine to be in the category of recreational activities, sometimes we forget the fact that it is truly one of our very largest agricultural industries, which means it is an incredible amount of income for the region. It's income for workers who are working in this all the time. Every time we go by a vineyard and you're looking at grapes that are under harvest or just under growing and evolving, that translates into a number of people in our community who are workers and part of the community that really are affected not only by the wine industry, but in this case, by how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting what they do. In April 2020, the Wine Institute released some information from a project they were working on, which indicated that the wine industry was projected to lose $5.9 billion across the 10,000 wineries in the country, and 80,000 acres that are under harvest for wine in many parts of the country. And that number is incorrect, and I apologize. I wrote it down wrong. So Jason or Joel or Adrian may be able to help me out with that in a little bit. Since March, tasting rooms across the country and in California pretty much had to close down or revert to outdoor dining or outdoor tasting. And it's drastically affected not only their business, but how they can connect with the community beyond just selling wine or making it available. But we also need to remember that there are thousands of people who work in this industry, from people who are clerks and information sources in the tasting rooms to field workers and winery workers who are working very hard to make sure that this is an industry that doesn't lose its footing based upon COVID. A lot of industries have been able to say, well, we're really unfortunate that we have to close, but we'll just start again next month or next year. You just can't turn off a vineyard and turn off a winery and say, we'll pick it up again later on. My guests today are Joel Peterson. He's the executive director of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance. Jason Haas, who's a partner and general manager with Tablas Creek Winery, and Adrian Ferrara, who is the co-owner of Klesi, and I'm going to probably get that wrong three or four times. I'm sorry, Adrian. Wines, and she is a professor of viticulture and winemaking at Cal Poly. And we want to talk today not just about what COVID has done to slow things down, but basically what the future is for this wine industry on the Central Coast. Because for those of us who drive by any of these wineries or any of these vineyards at any moment, you can see they're still moving, and to some extent they're still thriving, but we need to make sure they've got a place to offer their products to the public. I will throw it open. I don't know. Maybe I'll start with Joel, even though I told everybody they'd have free rein to make me get out of the way, and I'll agree to that. But because you're with the Alliance, you may have a better picture of the overall industry right now. What is Paso Robles and beyond Paso Robles, the entire Central Coast region, doing to try and keep a good footing during this pandemic?
Thanks, Fred, and thanks for having us on, obviously, today to talk about this. It's been a challenge, like any industry in this nation dealing with this pandemic right now. But I'll say the good thing that happened initially when the pandemic started is that winemaking is essentially considered essential because it's part of the food chain, and so winemaking was still able to happen. It was still able to grow grapes, work on the blends and the bottling, and essentially that the winemakers were able to do their jobs and make that product, which is great. The challenge was as we shut down tasting rooms, and so tasting rooms quickly pivoted. And I'll let these two great guests we have today, Jason and Adrian, talk more about that, how it affected their wineries and their neighbors' wineries. But we were down about 3 months where we didn't have any indoor tastings, and in fact, any tastings at all. The great news about that was we really have really strong wine clubs and marketing here in Paso Robles, and so for a lot of them, their wine clubs and their fans who already know those wineries were able to support them through online sales, phone sales, club shipments, and things like that. So it's really helped keep those wineries afoot while they couldn't open their doors and pour wine every day for those tasters who come through the Central Coast. They were able to get by. In late June and then July and August, as we did open up, we've had to deal with a lot of the distancing and the requirements. And the wineries have really done a great job getting creative and working really hard to serve outdoors, to do the distancing, to wear masks, to really just sanitize everything and making sure it's a safe and responsible tasting experience for those people who do come to the wineries. We have seen a resurgence. Really, the last month or two has been a strong visitation for us. The wineries, and I'll talk about this more, have been going to by appointment only. They've been going to smaller groups, and they've really been focusing about on the experience of that guest and really able to offer a wonderful experience. So I will say that we lost that direct to consumer sales, initially in those first few months as far as tasting room, but it's rebounded really well, and we're able to pivot as well. So I'll throw it to Jason and Adrian to talk about kind of their individual experiences, right, actually running a winery where they're making it and selling it and doing all those things at the same time.
Well, Joel's given us a good intro from that then. So maybe I'll start with Adrian. I wanted to answer Joel's question because it's better than my questions.
Well, I think one of the things that came up in my mind when Joel was discussing is the idea that we've all had to pivot a little bit and decide how we're going to keep our customers safe, how we're going to keep our employees safe, but also provide an experience that the customer enjoys and has a good time. We had our wine club pick up this last weekend, and instead of doing a party like we would typically want to do and celebrate with customers, we did picnics, and we were able to separate all the customers by 12 to 18 feet in most cases. So we can accommodate fewer people. We are lucky to be rural, so we've got more space, more space than we know what to do with. But staffing and everything else, we're trying to make sure we're being really smart about how we're doing that. And we want the customers to walk in and be like, oh, this is an ample amount of space. I've got my own spot. It's really clean. And we're looking for a type of experience that I think the customers feel really comfortable and excited about. And the people that are coming in, our wine club members, are kind of long-term loyal customers, really seem to have a good time with that. And I think that we were excited to see that we could pivot like that and still have people get equally excited about the experience that they're having. So that's been fun.
Jason.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Adrian just said. I mean, we have some advantages, I think, in Paso Robles and in the fact that the experiences we would want to give people anyway are experiences that lend well to being personalized and lend well to being distant. So, I mean, I know for us, we have these patios, kind of a cascade of patios outside our tasting room, that were honestly a little underutilized when our tasting room was open and everybody was inside. But when we realized when we were going to reopen, we realized that this was really going to be the safest way that we could be open. We kind of repurposed those patios, and we now have room for not as many people as we would have at our peak, but still a decent number of people. And we found that even though our traffic, I mean, the number of people who we can handle is down by like 30%, the experience we're able to give people and just the fact that people are grateful to be out and having this little bit of normalcy, our sales per customer have been up about 30%. So we're seeing fewer people, but selling about the same amount of wine, which, I mean, I'm thrilled with those results.
We're seeing the same thing here. We're seeing fewer people, but people are purchasing more because they're eating at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adrian, in your case, as a production winery and sales, you folks have only been around for about 12 years. I think you've been being sales for about 12 years. So I suspect that that building an identity takes a long time in the wine industry. It takes good wine, of course. I realize that too. But I'm wondering whether or not my thought is that this kind of frustration over COVID might slap a winery your size in the face a little more than it may slap Tobler's Creek in the face, because you may not have built the club loyalty yet that people like Tobler's Creek and a lot of the larger wineries have. I guess there's sometimes momentum's good, sometimes it's not good, but if you're a reasonably early player in the game, your momentum may help you coast through a little more. So I'm wondering if you're seeing, and when you talk to other wineries that are about your size, you told me earlier, and I probably should clarify for people that you folks produce about 3,000 cases a year, compared to Tobler's Creek that produces about 30,000 cases a year.
Yeah, I think that's right. 12 years, you can actually build a pretty decent database here on the Central Coast. So I think that we were in a little bit of a good position. You know, if we were 2 years out, it would be a much more difficult time for you. But I would say the biggest hit for us was in the restaurant side, obviously, and that's a smaller portion of our business than the direct-to-consumer side. On the wine club and tasting room side, we did have the database that we could do more e-commerce. We could connect with our customers on a regular basis, and they were, you know, they're purchasing more. Somebody that may have come in every, you know, once a month and bought two bottles is now buying a case or sometimes two cases to kind of stock up at home. And I think with all of this, it doesn't feel like you're making all these decisions on your own, or you're in it on your own. You know, you've got people that you're calling on a regular basis, like Joel and his team and Jason in some cases, and saying, hey, what are you doing? Because I'm trying to make decisions for our play. You know, Bob is such a leader in the direct-to-consumer side. So I feel like we've got the family of Paso Robles wineries that have made good decisions and trying to go about figuring out ways to affect customers in a meaningful way that's still safe. And then 12 years for us, I think, gave us enough time to establish the database we need to really buffer some of the concern.
Yeah.
Jason, you had some thoughts?
Yeah. I think for sure all of the wineries that I've spoken to have seen really kind of heartwarming responses from our fans reaching out, wanting to support us, converting, I think, what would otherwise have been a lot of wholesale sales into direct sales. And that's usually better for wineries because the margins are better. And I think that big changes for a lot of wineries have not been, it's not that people aren't drinking wine. I mean, wine consumption is up by all accounts during the pandemic. It's just that the different channels where people are used to buying wine are moving around a lot. So, I mean, for us, we sell about a quarter of the wine, roughly a quarter each year through restaurants, through wholesale, roughly a quarter through retailers sale, roughly a quarter out of our tasting room, and then roughly a quarter sent by mail, either to our wine club or for people who are just phoning or putting an internet order in. And what happened during those shutdowns is that restaurants were closed and our tasting room was closed. So that's, I mean, we were looking at that thinking we're going to be off by 50% in our sales. And what happened was that the internet and phone orders increased by about as much as our tasting room had been before. So we were really just sort of scrambling to try to make up the business that would otherwise have gone to restaurants. And some of that did go out a little more in retail. But it's been, I think the fact that wineries have had to invest in their e-commerce capabilities and their direct mail capabilities has set us up fairly well as an industry for the shifts that people are seeing in COVID times anyway. And we don't, a lot of the big retailers, the Amazons of the world, haven't really figured out how to sell wine. So we don't have that kind of competition with these huge behemoths that you might, if you were a mom and pop hardware store, or mom and pop retailer, where you're relying on people walking into your front door each day.
Yeah. Joel, I kind of stepped on your starting to answer some of the things Adrian said, and I apologize for giving Jason more than his equal time.
I'm always happy to follow either of both of these two winemakers. I was going to follow up with Adrian and say, yeah, I think 12 years is actually a great number of years to really build that base. What I'm seeing in our membership, and just so you know, the Pastorables Wine Country Alliance has about 170 wineries, nearly 50 growers. So we represent, you know, the lion's share of the wineries here in Paso Robles for sure. And everyone has had a pretty good last 3 months. I mean, they've definitely been supported by their wine club and by online sales and by these fans and followers. So the only ones I've heard of they're going through a little bit of struggles are the brand new wineries or the ones who didn't adapt to market quickly virtually. It was really the ones who've maybe only been there for a couple of years and they're just starting with their small list or they couldn't quickly pivot to sell wine online. So we really did see, like I said, the Paso Robles, we're lucky geographically, and we sit just north of Los Angeles, just to the east, just to the west of you know, Fresno and Bakersfield, and just to the south of the Bay Area. And so we really have this wonderful kind of getaway. And that's one thing we can talk about, is that when we ultimately did open up a few months ago, we were this quick respite for people to kind of buzz away for a night or two, hit their favorite wineries, explore their new favorite wineries. And that really helped, I think, us bounce back, because unfortunately, our friends and neighbors up in the North Coast really got hit with some fire and some smoke and extreme temperatures. So we were unfortunately the beneficiary of that, because we had a really good July because of that. So I just wanted to talk about that for a second.
Yeah. So even though we had some problems with some smoke around here and even though the fires were reasonably far away from us, there was a lot of lingering smoke even in the area. Was that much of an effect for production? Because you all were getting ready to start harvesting about the time the fires were hitting their worst as far as the air we were getting through here. I realize other parts of the state got hit a lot worse than we do, and there are people who are still battling that particular struggle. But there were days here that we could barely go outside, and I'm wondering what that did to the wine grapes.
As far as we can tell, I mean, we've been sending stuff in to get tested. As far as we can tell, it appears like we were far enough away from the fires and the compounds that impact that what's called smoke taint, the flavors that would bond to the grapes, those volatilize off. And the further you are from the location where the fires start, the less is left to attach to the grapes, even if you smell the smoke. So we're not feeling like we're out of the woods, but at least everything that we've tested has been either no levels or levels way below anything that would be perceptible. So I don't feel comfortable declaring victory, but at least it feels like at this point, maybe we did dodge the bullet.
Yeah. Adrian, what are your thoughts? Were they anything that you folks
noticed? We're a little bit behind Jason. So I'm probably 2 weeks of data behind Jason. I think that fermentation is really a critical time to see if there's the sensory, if you're seeing on the sensory side that there is smoke taint. And since we're still just crushing, it's too soon to tell for us. So we're also hopeful. And I think, you know, there is a lot of research out there suggesting that the distance and the proximity to the fire puts you at a lower risk. So I'm hopeful that that will be an influencer too.
Yeah. One of the things that has come up in a lot of discussions, and it hasn't it hasn't been something that the county's talked about that much. And the county health department hasn't talked about it that much. But you're dealing, especially this time of year, with a tremendous number of people in your facilities that probably, I'm not quite sure how many people you had in the average winery as far as a percentage of employees total that you may have had in March or April compared to what you have in July, August, and September and into October. But trying to keep those people safe, I'm sure, is a good portion of what you're up against. And my hunch is from knowing the kind of people that I associate with and the people who are interested in the wine industry and supporting you, one of their big concerns is making sure that all of those workers are safe. Has that been a challenge, or has there been a pretty good game plan in place for all of you?
We went ahead and we did quite a bit of education on this and sent out best practices through the Wine Institute and California Association of Wine Grape Growers, which is called COG. And we've done our best to try and educate folks on making sure people do have the protective equipment. And the great thing is the wineries in this region really have done a nice job making that a big part of what they're doing. I mean, cellars are big places. Vineyards are big places where you really can make areas. And I'll let these two speak to how they've done it in their cellars and their vineyards. But I really think that the wine owners that I deal with, for the most part, have really made this a priority to making sure people are safe, whether they be someone who's pouring wine or making the wine or picking the wine. So I'll let Jason and Adrian chime in.
Adrian, you had some thoughts you were starting with.
I was going to say, we're so small. We've got one intern coming in on a regular basis for harvest, and then we've got a tasting room employee, and we try to make it as safe as possible by just restricting the amount of people that can come in so we don't have more than one tasting room employee at a time or more than one cellar employee at a time. And I guess that's a luxury for us as a small business, but it must be more difficult as the winery size is larger.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of your raw grapes from the bad choice of words, not a well-educated winery person? Anyway, you get a lot of the fruit that's coming in from the vineyard. Is it coming in under contract from vineyards owned by other people, or how many acres of that are you working with?
We're about half and half. So we're about 12 acres here on the estate. And then we do source some fruit as well. So there is some contract picking that's happening.
Yeah. I mean,
Jason, you have
to go ahead. I mean, for us, I feel like the production side of it is actually pretty easy to keep people safe. We made a couple of changes in, like, right as things started in March and April, to do things like, instead of having our vineyard crew, and we have a full-time vineyard crew of 12 who we give year-round employment to, and normally they would all show up and hang out. We have a break room, and everybody would sort of assemble there, and we talk about what we're going to do, and then everyone would ride up together to the blocks that we're working on, whether it's pruning or fruit thinning or shoot thinning or whatever it is that we're doing. And we just changed it so that at the end of each day, we would have an outdoor meeting and decide what was going to be done the next day, and then everyone would drive their own car to the rows that they were working on. And once you're outside, it's pretty straightforward. It's just the gatherings that you have to be concerned with. And in the cellar, Joel mentioned this. I mean, cellars are pretty big places. You're not often having to work right on top of other people. And it's not a much bigger team for us during harvest. We increase from 5 to 7. So we have five winemakers year round, and then we add 2 interns. And so it's like any other workspace. If you're going to be in proximity to people for any duration, you have masks and you're being careful. And in a lot of cases, it's pretty straightforward to make sure that people are working on their own thing in their own space for most of that time. So you have air moving anyway. You're trying to get the carbon dioxide from fermentation out of your cellar anyway. So our CO2 fans are on, the doors are up and open. And I don't worry so much about the production side. You just need to be conscious of where are the places where people will gather and how do you mitigate risks when that's the case. On the customer side, again, because we're forced to be, everyone is forced to be outside, which makes it a lot easier. We'd made the decision even before we were forced to that was the right choice anyway. But you have plenty of space in between tables. We moved to these kind of touchless wine glass carriers. So when people come and sit down, we're serving wine in flights, and There's these little stainless steel, wrought iron glass holders that we carry the glasses out for people so we don't have to be handling them in front of them. And it's, there aren't a lot of issues with having to make sure you're maintaining a little more space. I feel for the wineries that are like in downtown spaces where they don't have as much outside space. Particularly as we move into winter, which is going to be more of a challenge. I think that's going to be a bigger challenge than the day trying to keep people cool on hot days. What do you do when it's raining? What do you do when it's cold? So there will be additional challenges as we move towards winter, but I feel pretty good with everybody exchanging information and trying to be responsible and trying to be thoughtful about the way that they do it, that we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind folks that if they want to be part of this discussion and they've got some questions they want to bring out, you can call 549-8855 and give us a call and we'll put the pose the questions to our guests. You can also email us at voices@kcbx.org. We're monitoring the email and we'll do our best to make sure that your questions or concerns or interests get into the discussion. As you were both talking about the tasting environment and things like that, my hunch is that you've had to shift to some extent. If I was going to go tasting right now, I would probably not consider myself going tasting. What I'm actually doing is looking at the wineries I've been to before, looking at the wineries that may have something that I haven't tried before, and pretty much buying wine and taking it home, only because there is still, you know, fear among all of us. I happen to be an old fart, and so I'm a little more paying attention to how close I get to other people, especially some of them who've been out wine tasting all day. But it becomes a factor that my hunch is a lot of sales you're seeing, and you may have mentioned this earlier in a nuance of this, are not only repeat purchasers, but people who show up at your tasting room and just say, you know, I'm not here to taste today, but there's, you know, can I have three bottles of Nebbiola? And so I'm wondering if that has shifted how you're looking at the flow of people in the wineries.
We're definitely seeing that. I would say a third of people that call in and make an appointment, the appointment is simply to pick up or purchase something. And so we'll try to get that ready in advance of their purchase. And then they can simply walk up and we can either hand it to them, set it out somewhere, or put it in their trunk if they want to. We try to make it as flexible as possible on people that do have concerns about being out in public.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that too. Though, honestly, I was expecting to see an even higher percentage of people who that was all they felt comfortable with. Like they would want us to, like they would drive up and want us to put the wine in their trunk, and then they would drive off and not even get out. I think as people have started to reemerge and spend time in various sorts of commercial or recreational activity, these sorts of outdoor, mostly seated, distanced wine tastings, I think they're one of the safest kinds of recreational activities that people can do. And there, at the same time, I don't think that it really compromises how enjoyable it is. In a lot of ways, I think that's the best kind of tasting. Honestly, it's the kind of tasting that we asked people to pay more for before COVID. They would reserve this special seated flight tasting. Now it's what everybody gets. So I think it's a way of people kind of recapturing a little bit of the kind of pre-COVID normalcy in a way that does feel pretty safe. So I would say that we've seen a lot more people being like, you know, this feels great. I was a little worried. I hadn't gone out and done anything like this before, but it feels really good.
We're actually going to take a break for a minute or so. Let everybody catch their breath. The studio engineers like it if we would just be quiet for long enough for them to actually breathe. And we appreciate that. This is Central Coast Voices. We're talking with folks from the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance today. And we'll be back with you live in about a minute. So thanks for joining us. And we will continue. We've got a lot more to talk about.
Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices. If you have questions you want to have answered, you can send them to us at voices@kcbx.org or call them into us at 805-549-8855.
Being with us today, and we're glad to have you with us. We are talking with folks. I'm talking with Joel Peterson, who's the executive director of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance, Jason Hawes, who's a partner and general manager at Tobless Creek Vineyard, Adrian Ferrara, who is a co-owner and co-owner of Klesse Wines and a professor at Cal Poly. And Adrian, we are going to get some time to talk about what's going on at Cal Poly for you too. And we've gotten so wrapped up in wine, we'll have to talk about wine education a little bit later on in the program. Joel, as we were going on the break, one of the things I was thinking about was the fact that we need to get an understanding of how people from out of the area. Because, you know, I live less than 10 miles from both of these folks. So my ability to do this at the spur of the moment is really easy. One of my friends, who happens to live in Los Angeles he said he has to plan 3 days around enough time to come to the wineries. So what kind of questions are you getting from the public? I suspect your phone and your email is full of is this winery open? Is that winery open? Can I really find places to eat and to taste in the Paso Robles area?
Yeah. Those calls really started happening in July. Really was the first time when people, you know, I'm led by a great board at the Wine Alliance here. We've got people like Jason Haas on there and Austin Hope and Tyler Russell and Molly from Justin. Just some really good leaders who really, we thought through these things of when do we, you know, let's stop marketing for a while, but then when is it time to actually start marketing? And we did the marketing in a very responsible way of saying, if you do come, this is what it's going to look like. It wasn't drop everything and come to wine country. It was, if you decide to leave your house and leave your town and come to visit us, here's what it's going to look like. And so we really started getting calls and emails in July and August. And the last few weeks have been really interesting because I've been working here at the office by myself for a while. And I get calls of people who haven't left their house in months. And they're saying, I'm coming to Paso Robles. We're so excited. It's the first time we've left San Francisco. What's going on there? Where can we go? And so it's fun to say, well, you can come. There's tastings there outside. Oh, cool. What's that look like? Well, they you're going to have your own little seated area. They're going to bring you wine. They're going to, you know, talk about it. Then you can taste it under the oak tree or under the awning. They're super excited about that because I think a lot of people, if you go to the bigger cities, and I've had the chance to go to both LA and San Francisco over the last few months, and they're ghost. I mean, they're unfortunately, they are in a place where the restaurants still haven't reopened. They can't go out into a space where it's easy just to sit along the roadside because they've got either got traffic or congestion or they just don't want to leave the house because there's literally hundreds or millions of people around them. So we live in a place that's like a paradise. There's a lot of people here. There's not a lot of traffic here. Even though we have 150 plus tasting rooms, they're all really spread out and you can call and you can get a great experience, whether you're going to go to someplace tiny, like Klesse or small to medium size, like Tobless Creek or one of the bigger ones who has, you know, thousands of wine club followers, but you're still going to get that intimate experience here in Paso Robles on the Central Coast, because you're going to get, to Jason's point, someone who's going to just take care of your small group. It's that group's going to have either 2, 4, 6 people in it probably. And you're going to get time to learn about the wines. And you're going to get an enjoyable experience because you're not going to have traffic when you're driving here. You're going to have great no parking challenges, and you get to drive through wine country. So we really feel like we're a great getaway for the people who live in the bigger areas. And I'm sure that both Jason and Adrian can talk about that. They've got, you know, wine club members who probably, it's probably been their first time leaving the city to come to Paso Robles.
Yeah. I want to hold on to that a second, and I'll get to Adrian and Jason in a couple minutes, because it occurred to me as you're talking about that, is that what comes to mind for me is this shift in the way people look at wineries and look at the experience. The example that I can use, and there may be other examples I'm not aware of, is like Tin City. Mm-hmm. you know, you talk about there's no, as you said, there's no parking problem on the Central Coast to come to a winery. I don't know what it's like.
There is Tin City.
There is Tin City. Okay. If I go to Tin City, I'm going to go to Tin City at like Tuesday at 3 o'clock.
Well, yeah,
not Saturday.
It's
afternoon.
True, but it's all relative. Because if you were like parking at the Grove in Los Angeles, you're still going to, you know, it's still going to be a 10 minute walk to Abercrombie & Fitch or whatever. So yeah. it's a relative parking problem, yeah. But yes.
Have those, those small clusters of wineries, you've got a number of them in downtown Paso. You have some of them just literally you get off the freeway for the 13th Street exit and all of a sudden there's two or three wineries, some of them with known names,
yeah.
That are right there for people to see when they get off the freeway. If anybody's looking at Google and on their maps, they're discovering this big cluster of wineries all right off of Ramada Drive that's Tin City. Is there any place else in the region that kind of clustering is becoming a factor? I mean, Jason, you've got a couple of wineries around the corner. I don't know who's around the corner from Adrian's. But I'm wondering if you do events together or try and put out some kind of word together to get people to come talk to each other about what's going on.
I think pre-COVID, certainly that. Yeah. There's a Downtown and Winery Association, and there's a Downtown Winery Group here in Paso. There's almost 25 downtown wineries. They work together to kind of schedule things. And I think the Tin City Group does as well. About half of the Tin City folks are members of our association. But I think that was almost a pre-COVID situation where they were doing events and planning those things. But now that it's kind of no events and people are planning small just tastings, that's been a difference. But they're the ones who I think are going to be challenged a little bit as we look at cold and inclement weather coming up soon. But they've been really the city's been great. They've created these little parklet areas where they've closed off some of the parking areas, and there's barriers around there, there's shade structures, there's lighting. So they've done a nice job to still make it a really fun, intimate area, because downtown Paso Robles is one of the most charming places in the West Coast, I think. I mean, it's a wonderful park. There's restaurants, and it's still really a special place despite the situation we're in.
Yeah. We can get back and visit some more of this. As I look at the clock, I want to make sure we don't miss out on some things I wanted to talk to Adrian about. And I want to reiterate, Adrian's a professor at Cal Poly of wine and viticulture there. Obviously Cal Poly is not doing as much hands-on things as you'd like them to do. And the wine industry is a hands-on industry. How are you seeing what's happening with Cal Poly? You know, students that in some cases frustrated that they're not able to get the hands-on experience they may want all the time right now. How is that being addressed?
Yeah, I do know 13% of our courses are in person, particularly the labs. And so there are some wine and viticulture courses that are available in person this quarter. I'm mostly on the wine business side, teaching in marketing and sales. But I also run the internship program, and I have noticed that there's a pretty big uptick this year in the amount of interns. So, of course, Mother Nature didn't stop for COVID. So we've still got grapes coming in the wineries. We're still clamoring for students. And in many cases, the students decided to take the time off of some of their coursework and dedicate this quarter to harvest, which I think is a good choice for a student that wants that hands-on experience. And it's been a great thing for the wineries, because typically we don't have enough students to provide local wineries, statewide wineries, with internships. We've had a couple of global internships get canceled, obviously, so they relocated to a local internship. And we're continuing to just place students with wineries and give them those kind of real world hands-on experiences they're looking for in the cellar.
I mean, I know that happened to us. We had an intern who was supposed to come from France. Like, that didn't happen. So we have a Cal Poly student instead. I mean, so I think there are some additional opportunities that have become available because people have had to be more local. They've had to look more locally for our interns and for our team members and vice versa also.
Well, and we really ask the students, you know, you've got to think about your housing. You've got to think about being super careful in the proper protective equipment. And the students jumped through hoops to be able to go do internships locally. And I was just really excited to see how many different places have Cal Poly wine and vit interns and probably other students that are not in the wine and viticulture program or out working harvest.
Yeah. I would suspect one of the things that you may be looking at too is, I mean, if I were in a position of being a Cal Poly student right now, is my thought would be, gee, if I can't do that much hands-on stuff on campus, if I can get to Tobless Creek, if I can get to other wineries in the area that have internships available, you know, I don't know if we're finding wineries in the region who are saying, I've got people begging for internship positions and I don't have a spot to put them in without feeling like we're too crowded, or overwhelmed. My thought was, gee, if I were stuck in front of a computer all day long doing classes, and I was a viticulture student, I'd want to get out of here.
Yeah, I don't see that there aren't enough, but typically we've not had enough students. So it felt like this year that we had more students that were able to go into these placements. So I didn't have the panicked phone calls at the end of July from wineries saying, I have to have two more people or anything like that. So,
yeah.
Hey, Adrian.
Joel, you had something.
I just had a question for Adrian. Actually, I was thinking about this. Have you, you know, in spite of this pandemic, are you changing some of the way you talk about wine marketing and how this is going to affect the industry? Because I'm looking at that as our association and the way we market and bring people to Paso Robles. And I'm thinking about what this looks like next year and beyond. So I'm sure that you're talking about that to your students as they look at how this is really going to affect us.
Absolutely. I mean, even in addition to what's already offered in the coursework that exists, we're talking about possibly new coursework that needs to be designed to make for a more robust kind of new media, social media, opportunities for students to engage. And there's so much out there on the wine side that has been successful under these circumstances. And I think that we really need to probably provide more of that content to students in the curriculum. And we're making plans to do that. One of the funny things that's happened is in this course, in spring, I taught the direct-to-consumer class. And one of the assignments was to have students write an article to wine club members, in theory, wine club members, about what a student in quarantine at school looks like. And two students wrote fantastic pieces about how their parents want to be in all their classes because they're learning about wine, and they can't get their parents out of their bedroom listening to them talk about wine. And it was such a fun read for me. I had such a good time in that class.
That's funny. I kind of want to ask Jason the same question, because I'll be totally honest here. And Jason's been ahead of the curve on this pandemic since day one, and he deserves props for that. I think he a month before it was here, he was like, Joel, we got to be thinking about this. And then, you know, 2 weeks before we closed down California, he's like, we're closing down California. So Jason's known this stuff. So what are you thinking, Jason, in terms of you guys' marketing efforts and how we're going to do this?
Well, I mean, there are pieces that don't change, but one of the things, I mean, you mentioned that events really aren't happening. And one of the kind of big picture take homes that I've realized through this pandemic is that by and large, wineries and wine communities have asked their customers to come to them in one way or another to experience the wine. So whether that's you go and visit wine country, you go to a winery, or whether that's you go to a wine dinner or a wine festival, you're there physically where the winery people are. And what we've had to do during the pandemic is we've had to make ourselves available where the people are. So whether that's virtual tastings, whether that's panel discussions over Zoom, whether that's video content or social media content that you're making available that people can access when they want to, when it's appropriate. I feel like a lot of these things were things that we will really benefit from having learned going forwards, because being able to reach people in different ways is such an important thing. So I don't know. I feel like we've learned how to do a lot of stuff that we probably should have been learning anyway, but we were so busy just dealing with the day-to-day of people coming through our front doors or ordering wine or wanting to talk about this or us on the road that we didn't have to.
Yeah. I did get a couple of questions by email that I want to get in here before we run out of time. First one was from Nicole, which basically says, is there any movement to get live music back at the wineries, and what are guests into that would be a factor with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've gotten that question quite a bit this week, actually, just from our member wineries who are trying to figure out the rules on live music, because it's almost open to interpretation a little bit. Because if you look at the state guidelines as to why there shouldn't be live music, it has to do with bringing together people who are from different households and the opportunity that it creates for people to dance. Now, that's literally kind of what it talks about, is that you're going to bring people from who aren't quarantining together, and then they're going to kind of give them wine and they're going to want to dance. So it sounds funny, but it's not funny because it happens, right? So now it's funny because the people who I talked to from the Wine Institute are actually kind of trying to, we're working to get that changed a little bit, because I think there's ways you can provide live music for people who simply will just enjoy music and enjoy, because it's so great and we miss that, and enjoy a glass of wine and not have this thing where it's going to totally turn into this mosh pit. But our county, I will say, has been very diligent in calling me and our staff and our winery, saying, hey, don't forget there's no live music. So it's a little bit of a challenge, I'm not going to lie. We hope we can find that medium in there, because I think that there is a way to still have live music and support our local musicians, and trust the facts that people aren't going to suddenly create an unsafe situation. So I guess my question would be, I'm working on that. The Wine Institute's working on that. And our county has really been a little bit of a challenge on that, but not to say that they're not doing their job, because they're interpreting the state's order on that.
Yeah, we are a very live music oriented county. I mean, the number of wineries that have small and large facilities for live entertainment is a big challenge, I'm sure. I don't want to just ignore this and not talk about it for a moment. I don't believe we can give him an answer, but Joel, I'm going to pass this on, especially to you. We got an email from Elizabeth that said that they saw a movie called Water and Power. That's a documentary about non-local companies buying into Paso Robles in order to control some water rights. I think that's kind of a little bit off topic for where we are right now today, but I'm going to pass that email, Elizabeth, on to Joel at the Wine Country Alliance, and he'll have your email address also, and maybe you can respond to that. That would be good. It's a topic that's facing all of us. I mean, we're still in the middle of a drought, and as super large multinational companies start looking at the value of our wine industry, it's something that I'm sure you have to face on a regular basis.
It is, but I will say, you know, we're really lucky to have people like on the show today, like Jason and Adrian, who they work with Dry Farm Vineyards, and so many of our vineyards and our winery owners here are super stewards of the land and careful with everything they use, whether that be, you know, the water they use from our land and beyond, because I think they understand this is going to be a multi-generational thing. This isn't for the next 5 or 10 years. This is for their kids and their kids' kids.
Yeah. What I do for water conservation related to wine is just drink Zinfandel. So that affects us the best I can, I think, most of the time. This has been a wonderful program, and I'm glad we've had a chance to talk about this. I want to remind all of you that one of the key questions for our listeners, and I'm sure that you hear on a regular basis, and I appreciate the answers you've given us to this point, was the fact that how your workers and the environment that surrounds you has been able to be maintained. We've talked a lot about the experience for tourism, the experience for wine purchasing and retail. We have talked about the fact that the people who are working on those vineyards and then those wineries is part of the critical issue that we have to look at and address related to the COVID-19. We don't know when this is going to end. We hope it will end soon, but it's certainly been a big factor from that standpoint. As most of our listeners are used to, and that is that because Fred talks too much, he always at least wills away the last few minutes of time so everybody else can get their final words in. Jason, I'll start with you. You have two minutes. It's not on a stopwatch. You're okay. to give us an idea of what you want to make sure people are aware of about Wine Country and what's going on with you folks into the future, because it's been a tough year.
Thanks, Fred. It has been a year where we've all learned a lot. I think we've learned a lot about our businesses. We've learned a lot about our customers and how to reach out to our customers. It has meant that a lot of us have had to make some changes to the way that we've done business. I mean, we we were very proud for 20 years that you didn't need an appointment to go to go visit Tubbless Creek. You got recommended to go and visit by a winery down the street. You could just show up. Unfortunately, that doesn't work if you have limited capacity and you have to maintain distance and you don't want people building up in lines. So it's worth reminding people that if you have not visited wine country since we've reopened from COVID, it's worth doing some advanced planning. Please do reach out to the wineries, check their websites. They will almost certainly be doing something a little differently than they were before. But I don't feel like that means that the experience is any less rich. And in fact, I feel like we're giving people as good or better an experience as we ever have. So we're super grateful for the support that we've gotten from our customers and the leadership that we've gotten from Joel and the Wine Alliance and the Wine Institute and the rest of the California wine community. But feel like you can feel really good about going out and supporting wineries, that you'll be safe doing it and have a great time.
Okay. Then based upon that, I'll throw in one quick question for you. So people can indeed call your winery and say, gee, are you open today? How crowded do you expect to be? They may call from their cell phone and say, how crowded is it right now? Because you have to accept the fact that it's a long drive off of the freeway to get to Tubbless Creek.
Sure. Absolutely. We will always squeeze people in that same day if we can. But if people have the opportunity, I mean, particularly on weekends when it's busy, we're now booking up our appointments 2 or 3 weeks out. So it's worth taking the time to do some advanced planning. And we now have the ability for people to reserve online the way you would at a restaurant or things like that. There's more and more of that technology that helps make it easier.
Good. Thank you. Adrian, what do you want to make you, where are your class today? What do you want to make sure we don't forget?
Well, you know, I was thinking about, as we've been talking about how people come in, and it seems like a lot of our, longtime customers are coming in and they're saying, how are you? And really, I think all of us in the wine side, on the tasting room and wine club side, we're doing really well because of our locals are coming in and supporting us on a regular basis, long-term customers and communities that are in close proximity. Joel talked about, coming from LA or even San Jose. There were a couple people from San Jose, but we've been really fortunate to have a lot of local support. There's a lot of people that I think in times like this want to support locally. You know, I'm going to Eto for all of my pasta, which is fantastic. And McPhee's isn't open, but he's opened up down in Tin City. So, we're doing the same thing and we're trying to pay it forward to all of our local companies. And I've really enjoyed that sentiment over the last 6 months, not 7 months.
I'm laughing because I've left my discussion of Eto's pasta out of this discussion. I spent more time buying pasta at Eto than I have buying wine this year. But thank you very much. Anyway, but that's a good point. There's lots of things to make the experience a little broader for everybody too. That's terrific, Joel. Okay, you're the guy with the alliance. You get the last word.
Well, thank you. And thanks for having us. This has been a fun discussion to talk about what's been happening. And I think that the good news and the silver lining in all this is that we have had a really good time to almost get to know our locals here. I mean, our first 3 or 4 months was a lot of it was local people here supporting us and going out to the wineries and buying things and checking on us, because we do live in a special community where we're tight knit, we know each other, but we're also friends. And so it was nice to check in and make sure that we could. People were supported and they could get through it together. And we knew what was going on with rule changes and guidelines and signage in your winery and personal protective equipment, things like that. So it was really a nice time to kind of recalibrate. This region's been blessed with great leadership for 30 years, back when it was Gary Eberle and the Beckett family and Justin Baldwin and people like that to now when we have new leadership from the new wineries. And so it's just been really a special time. We're not out of the woods. We know that this is a pandemic, and now it's almost like now we're learning how to live with it. And so we have outdoor tastings, and is that going to be indoors eventually? We'll see. Maybe we'll eventually get to the point where we can have 25% inside. So it's been a nice time to kind of pivot, and that's the word of 2020 is that pivot word. But we've been able to do it. We've been able to switch to virtual tastings and virtual events, and we do a a winemaker Zoom hangout every Thursday here at the Alliance, where we feature three different winemakers. We've done it for since I think we started that in May. We had over 75 winemakers on, which has been great. And this weekend would have been what's called Harvest Wine Weekend, and now it's assembly. It's basically come to Paso and go taste and find a winery or visit a winery you haven't been to in a long time. So it's no longer the big grape stomp or the big 200 person pickup party that these guys are used to, but we're making do, we're getting through it, and we live in a really special place. So we thank the local community, the local listeners who have supported our wineries for years, and they're going to do in years to come. So Paso Robles Wine Country and San Luis Obispo Wine Country is a special place. So we're honored to be here and be part of this fabric of this community.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for being with us today. I appreciate all of you. And it's been fun talking about wine. At this time of day, we can talk about it more than we can drink it. But we'll catch up when we can. This has been Central Coast Voices. I thank you very much. I want to remind you that next week, Chris Kington Barker is going to be with us. She's going to take a look at parenting children with special needs during COVID-19. She'll be speaking with families with special needs children and how they are coping with the pandemic. It affects people that are not used to being sheltered in, or in some cases need to be sheltered in under different circumstances. That'll be Chris's program next week. She'll be with you. As we've told you before, Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, along with and working with KCBX Public Radio. The program is underwritten by a grant from Joan Gellert Sargent, and we appreciate her continuing support. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org. That's voices@kcbx.org. If you have further questions specifically related to our topic today, I will gladly pass those along to our guests, and they can respond to that. Thank you to Sarah and Rachel in studio today. Doing this remotely when they're stuck in the building and we're trying to do it from our phones and computers makes it harder for them than it is for us. We get to talk and they get to do all the work. So thank you, Rachel and Sarah. Thank you to my guest today, Joel Peterson, Jason Hawes, Adrian Ferrara. I thank you very much. Talking about wine is a wonderful thing to do, especially when it's all so close by. This has been Central Coast Voices. We'll see you next week.